The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante. You're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. I want to say thank you to our underwriter, AFC Urgent Care of Brentwood. Is it the cold? Is it a cold or just the flu? That's the question nearly every adult will ask themselves this winter. My program, Get Real to Heal, is underwritten by AFC Urgent Care in Brentwood, and their physician-led team is ready to diagnose your cold or flu using their in-house lab 7 days a week. AFC Urgent Care reminds you that cold symptoms usually include a sore throat, runny nose, sneezing, and coughing, whereas flu symptoms are more severe, set in more suddenly, and include fever, chills, muscle and joint aches, and when you see a physician without an appointment, when you need to see a physician without an appointment, or after traditional physician office hours. We're going to get through this show today. It's going to be good. Visit AFC Urgent Care across from Brentwood City Hall on South Brentwood Boulevard. You know, they helped me out earlier this week. My son was having some symptoms, and I really wasn't sure what was going on with him. So our whole family went in, and we had him seen, and it was just great to have the peace of mind and knowing that, you know, we were okay, and he was going to be all good by the end of the week. So, yeah, they're great. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kelsey Schwander, PharmD. It's great to have you.
Yes, thanks for having me so much on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so you are a doctor of pharmacy, and you have your own consulting company here in St. Louis.
Yes, so, so doctor of pharmacy, so I'm a pharmacist. And yep, I started Be Health Consulting last year. And really, my mission is to, you know, empower patients, providers, and businesses through medication consulting. So really, with patients, I'll meet them one-on-one. I'll go over all their medications in great detail. I'm sure you run into this problem all the time where you sit down with someone and you say, hey, you know, what are you taking this medication for? And they look at you and they have no idea. And so I really dive deep into, you know, why are you on this medication? Do you need to be on this medication? Just so they have a full understanding.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I've been that patient at one point in time. I know we spoke at an event recently and we're on the same panel, and you got to see a little bit of what I had been through with regard to medications and trying to figure out, you know, what the heck do I even need to be on? Why am I on this? So it's great to have people like you on the side of the patient, really able to break things down and help them understand what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, when you showed your medication list, you know, unfortunately, that's how a lot of patients are. And so really just trying to break down that barrier and, you know, have them understand what they're taking their medications. And then for providers, I provide a lot of medication education. And then if they have really complicated patients, they'll send them to me and I'll review them and, you know, give them my recommendations. And then for businesses, really, so a lot of healthcare providers, a lot of healthcare systems, just educating them on new ways you can incorporate medications or the best way to utilize medications to help increase revenue, but also to keep the patient the center of the focus. So that's really why I started this, is to, you know, help patients and keep them at the center of healthcare and to help them out as much as I can.
And I think it's so important. You know, I know we talk a lot about on this show, you know, my past history, and, you know, there were a lot of medications that I didn't need to be on. I know there are a lot of people that watch this show or listen to this show that are like, yeah, you know, medication is just overused, yada, yada. We don't need it. We shouldn't be doing it, but it has its place. I think we're so lucky to live in a time where we have options. You know, we have the information about nutrition and natural ways that you can go and address the root causes of diseases through functional and integrative medicine. But when medication is necessary, and sometimes it is, it's great to have people like you on the side of the patient. And I just have to say that again, because I think it's so important that we acknowledge that and have those options. So how did this all start? You're originally from Colorado.
Yes. So I'm originally from Denver. And then I did my undergraduate at UC Santa Barbara. And then I came back to pharmacy school in Colorado. And so right now what I'm also doing a lot of is cannabis consulting. And this is kind of where it stems from. So let me give you the background and how I got involved in this. A lot of people are like, how did a pharmacist get involved in cannabis? And so when I was in school, in pharmacy school, I think it was like my second or third year, recreational cannabis was legalized. Colorado Colorado was one of the first states. And so I had a lot of lectures on it. At the time, I didn't realize how innovative that was. And that was, you know, over 8 years ago. And the statistic today is that less than 9% of medical schools are teaching anything on cannabis.
You know, for as much as we hear about cannabis in the general public, and it's such a big controversy and really an uproar in a lot of places, it's coming. It's coming. It's here. And I'm really shocked that there aren't more places teaching about, you know, more of the schools aren't teaching about that already.
Yeah, it's really shocking. And so, you know, so long ago, we had lectures about cannabis. And so it kind of became second nature to me. I did a specialty residency in Colorado. And so I would just ask my patients, you know, do you smoke cigarettes? You know, do you smoke cannabis? Because it interacts with medications. And we would make therapy changes based on if they smoked or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and we're going to get into that a little bit in the show, right?
Exactly.
I think that's so important that people understand, because especially in areas where it's recreational, you know, I think it's one thing where, and we're going to get into that a little bit as well, state to state, it's varying. But yeah, this is not like having a beer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lots of interactions. So.
All right. Well, so you moved from Colorado to St. Louis. How long have you been here?
Yes. So about 2 years ago, we moved here. And actually, so last year, so the Farm Bill came out. So that is when you started to see CBD everywhere. So that legalized CBD. And I mean, you can see it at gas stations. You see it at Sephora. You see it. You see it everywhere. And that's really when here I started to get a lot of questions. And I quickly realized, whoa, there is a huge gap in knowledge here. And just coming from Colorado and having that background and coming here, I really realized that, you know, this is a need and to do some, you know, educating. And so, yes, we've been here for 2 years now.
Okay. And so now a big part of your business is, like you said, addressing, well, cannabis in Missouri. It's here and we got to get used to it. Okay. You want to talk about, so this is not an FDA approved drug.
So
we need to talk about that.
Yeah. So I always like to make a statement. So this is not an FDA approved drug. Everything I'm going to be discussing today is not approved. The uses of it are not approved. However, it's coming, like you said. So if you agree with it or if you don't agree with it, your patients are going to be using it. And so from my standpoint, I have the clinical background where I can look at the evidence, I can look at the studies, and get as much education out of those studies for my patients. And so with that said, a lot of the studies aren't as strong as your regular prescription medication because we can't study it in the United States. So trying to sort through all the information on the internet and studies from other countries, you know, it's a lot. And
can I just say how, okay, I don't even know if I have words for that. Like, okay, states' rights. Great. Very important. Our government is amazing. It's unique in many facets, but it always baffles me when we've got something that's able to be legalized at the state level. And then the federal government is blocking studies and research and things from happening. And it just seems very counterproductive.
Yes, it's very counterproductive. It's very confusing for the consumer. It's confusing for healthcare providers, because healthcare providers are like, should I be educating on this? And you know, for my standpoint, I feel like it is my public responsibility to educate my patients, because again, they're going to be using it if I think it's good for them or not. And so I want to make sure that they are using it. They have as much education. So when they go into a dispensary, they use it safely and they're educated on it.
That's incredibly important. All right. So how do you go about getting a card? And I like, we have some notes here that I'm going from safely and smartly. I like that you said that, because I have been to concerts recently where there was a medical professional there doling out cards. And anyway, yeah. I'll just digress there. Tell me how we'd go about doing this if someone's interested.
Yes. So yeah, I always tell people, you know, do your homework. The first thing you should really do is go to the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services. So they are the ones overseeing the cards. Go to the website. It's really user friendly. It has a checklist, so you know exactly what you need. And there's some, like you said, at concerts, online, you know, give me this money and we'll set it all up for you and do all the work for you. Don't do it. Go online, look at the checklist, register online. And then after that, you need to find a physician to certify. So Amendment 2 in Missouri allows physicians to certify patients for, you have to have one of the following 20 conditions. And the conditions range from anything from pain to Alzheimer's to cancer. The list goes on. And the list is actually online. It's really easy to see. And I always tell healthcare providers who are asking me to call a couple different places, you know, shop around just like you would a normal doctor. Ask, you know, what's your intake form look like? Do you do an actual examination? What type of education do you provide? So because the physicians, the way the law is written, the physicians actually don't have to do any education on cannabis because they're just certifying you for that disease state. So let's say you walked in and I said, you know, you had glaucoma. So I just have to certify you. You have glaucoma so you can go get a card.
Okay.
So I don't have to do any education on cannabis again, which another big red flag. But so it's good to call around and ask around to see if any physicians are providing that.
Okay.
And then after you see the physician, you go back online and then you can register and they'll give you a card. And you have to make sure you do it within 30 days of seeing the physician.
Okay. All right. So, all right, let's talk about what cannabis is. There are, you know, of course, THC and CBD. Those are the two components that are talked about. Mm-hmm. What is it? What does it do?
Yeah. So let's go. So cannabis is kind of the umbrella term, I like to say.
By the way, I'm just pretending like I've never been to college here. Basically, what does it do? It's such a mystery. Well, sorry, I had to just throw that out there. But yes, okay.
We'll dive into the evidence-based information behind
yeah,
it.
Sorry.
So let's get into the terminology first, because the terminology is a little confusing. So cannabis is really kind of the umbrella term. So when you actually speak about hemp or cannabis, it's actually referring to the flowering plant.
Okay.
The main species is Cannabis sativa. And, you know, within the plant, there's lots of different species. That's kind of the
Well, I was going to say there's sativa, and I know I've heard of indica as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we're going to get into that, but I'm also curious.
Yeah. So we won't dive deep into that, but there's different, you know, different strains. But the plant itself has over 400 compounds in it.
Wow.
So, and the ones we hear about the most are the cannabinoids. So the cannabinoids, which in that category is THC and CBD.
Okay.
And so those are the ones we're finding that have the most medical benefits. And there's still more things are coming out, and I'm sure we will see more cannabinoids coming out with more medical benefits.
Okay. All right. So how does this work in the body?
Yes. So our body has what we call an endocannabinoid system, so the ECS system. And so just like any biological system, there are neurotransmitters, so chemical signals that are in your body. So for example, let's say I am touching a hot pot. There are chemicals or neurotransmitters that will go down to my hand and say, ouch, this is hot, and go back up to my brain and tell me to take my hand off. So just like any system in your body. It's really responsible for a lot of homeostasis in your body. So the two main receptors, which I won't dive too nerdy and get too deep, but are the CB1, so the cannabinoid 1 receptors, and 2 receptors. So the CB1 receptors is mainly what THC binds to. And those are predominantly found in your brain and your spinal cord. So that's why you get those psychoactive side effects from the medication. And then CBD mainly binds to CB2, and those are mainly found on your immune cells. So that's why we're finding a lot of anti-inflammatory benefits with that.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I take CBD fairly frequently. I take it before I give talks, and I take it sometimes for anxiety or for sleep. And I have even my mother-in-law, God love her, she's taking it as a topical for pain. And mm-hmm. she's like, you know, that stuff's amazing. So it, you know, the efficacy is people are talking about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's lots of, you know, beneficial effects from CBD and THC. And there's also adverse effects that I like to talk about too. So yeah. Let's talk about some of like the beneficial effects. So CBD, you know, kind of like you were saying, can cause drowsiness, which can be an adverse effect or can be a beneficial effect for some people. It can be an anticonvulsant. So for people who have seizures. I would like to say, though, with CBD, one thing people need to look out for, if they have any liver problems, it is metabolized heavily in the liver, so you really should talk to your doctor before you use it.
That is great to know. No one has ever mentioned that to me.
Yes. So be careful with that. And then for THC, it's a great antiemetic or for nausea medication. And then It can have some effects on the heart. So I always tell people, if you have heart failure or it can cause tachycardia, which means rapid heart rate. If you have anything like that, you really should discuss with your doctor first before using.
Okay. And I will say, I don't normally go on public record saying this, but I might as well right now. When I was detoxifying from all the many, many medications that I found out that I didn't necessarily need to be on at the time, I did use THC for nausea. It was recommended by a medical professional that I knew, although it was not legal here yet. Mm-hmm. And I have to say it was relatively life-changing for that couple of weeks. It really helped tremendously.
Yes.
So...
yeah, there's a lot of studies out there with, you know, a lot of patients who have cancer, and it's, you know, worked wonders versus, you know, giving them more medications. You know, it's helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you've got, do you want to dive into this? I'm just going to let you, pharmacokinetics.
Yes. Yeah, so again, here I go being nerdy.
I love this. I love it.
How the drug works in the body and how it affects the body. So there's different ways, obviously, you can take CBD and THC. So we'll just say cannabis. So there's inhalation. You can smoke it. You can eat it. There's mucosal. So there's oils that you can put under your tongue. There's these things called troches. They look like little lozenges you can put in your tongue. And then, like you said, topical. And so it's really important to know kind of the onset of action. So how quickly does it start working in your body? And then how long does it last? And again, you know, with these dispensaries out there, the state is really relying a lot on the bud tenders to give this information. And you just really need to be careful who's giving the information and where you're getting the information from. I can't stress that enough. So let's talk about the onset of action. So, you know, how quickly does this work? So for inhalation, it works immediate, which is, it's a pretty good thing. So for patients, they can kind of titrate, which means they can kind of figure out their dose quicker, which works best for them. And the lasting effects is about 2 to 4 hours. However, a lot of patients don't want to smoke it, especially our older patients. So I don't know if you know this, but the fastest growing age range at using cannabis is our 65 and plus.
Really?
Yes. So not
okay, boomers.
Right? Not the largest age group, but the fastest growing. And when I talk to those patients, they don't want to smoke it. So they would rather ingest it. So they'd rather eat something. And so the problem with ingesting it is the onset of action can vary greatly. So it can be as quick as 30 minutes, but it can be long as 2 hours, which is a big problem. And the lasting effects is up to 6 to 8 hours. So it lasts pretty long. I always like to tell the story. I had a patient in Colorado who wanted to try it. And so she tried it and she came back to me and she said she had an awful experience. You know, it was too much. She had to sit on the couch for like 10 hours. And I was like, you know, could you bring me the label? Like, what did you have? And so she brought me the label and it was a cookie. And the serving size was 1/10 of the cookie. So I always tell my patients, you know, please, please, please read the labels because you really need to be careful. And I don't know about you, but I don't see any of my patients taking a cookie and cut. I don't know how you even cut a cookie.
I always just eat 1/10 of my cookies. I mean, all of my cookies, snickerdoodle, chocolate chip, doesn't matter to me.
That
no,
is really,
that is
control.
No one does that. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So just be really careful with the dosing. Make sure to read the labels just so that you're not overdosing yourself. And then mucosal. So there's a lot of like oils that the onset is usually about 15 minutes to an hour. The duration is about 4 to 6 hours. And then topical is pretty quick as well. So it's about like 15 minutes. And then it lasts about 2 to 4 hours. And the nice thing about topical, which I like, is so I always tell this with any medication, even prescription medication over the counter, anything you put into your mouth, it has to go into your stomach and then it has to be metabolized in another organ. So it's really affecting more parts of the body. So if you're truly using it for pain and you have a certain area, try topical. See if that works first because you have less of a chance of having drug interactions or other interactions versus, you know, orally taking it.
Okay. Well, and I want to go back to the point on smoking. Mm-hmm. So you're saying the population over 65, you know, I feel like if people in general are averse to smoking it, I could understand why. It's really been drilled into our heads that smoking is bad for us, it's going to cause lung cancer, we're going to have a lot of issues. So the difference between cigarettes and pure medical cannabis and smoking, what do we need to worry about or know there?
Yeah, so if you ask any healthcare professional, they would probably tell you, no, you shouldn't smoke it because there's not enough studies and evidence out there to say there isn't a link between smoking cannabis and lung cancer. There are some studies showing that there truly is not an increased risk. But again, it's not regulated very well. You don't know what else is in the cannabis that could possibly be causing, carcinogens in the lungs. As of now, there's not enough evidence to show. So it's kind of do it at your own risk. Again, a lot of studies show that there isn't a link, but we don't know that answer yet.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. All right. So let's talk about medication interactions. Anything else that you want to add to what you just said?
So just medication interactions. I can't tell you how many times people come and talk to me and they're like, oh, well, it's just CBD. It's not going to interact with anything. I'm like, no, it really does interact with some medications. So, really do your homework. You can contact me. I can help you out with some interactions. But the way it works is it can either increase the level of the drug in your body or decrease the level of the drug in your body. So, for example, if you're on a blood thinner and you're smoking cannabis, and let's say it increases the level of the drug. So that means you're at a risk of bleeding. So you have to be really careful. If on the opposite side, let's say you're taking a blood thinner and it decreases the level in your body. So that means you could be at a risk for clotting. So again, if you're on, I always tell patients kind of a rule of thumb, if you're on HIV medications, if you transplant medications or blood thinners, really talk to a healthcare professional before experimenting with cannabis.
Okay. Yeah. Incredibly important. All right. So let's dive in a little bit further. I know as a mom, I have a lot of concerns about adolescents and the availability of medical marijuana or recreational marijuana now just right across the river. What are your thoughts? What do we need to know about that?
Yeah. So there's a huge public safety concern. And so the population I really like to talk about is adolescents. So the way the Missouri law is written, so to get a medical card, you have to be 18 years and up. So do you know when our brain stops developing?
25, right? It doesn't myelinate until 25.
Yeah. So women is like around 21, and males, they take a little bit longer.
Okay. 25. Yeah. Well, I have a boy at home, so this is what I'm educated on. All right.
And so, yeah. But the age is 18. And so really what they're finding is there's actually a huge study done in Australia, and they tracked a whole bunch of people using cannabis. And what they found, the conclusion really was adolescents who started smoking it ended up having a lower IQ because it affected brain development. So there's belief that smoking cannabis during your adolescent years before your brain, so 25, is fully developed, could interfere with that.
Okay, that's really good to know. And then what about, if mom is using THC or CBD, right? What's the risk of passing that through to baby?
Yes, so definitely during pregnancy, you shouldn't use CBD or THC. Again, there's not enough studies out there to show the effects of it, but there's links between low birth rate, preterm, brain development that they're starting to do more research on that, but definitely just to be safe, stay away from it. And then also for breastfeeding. So cannabis is really lipophilic, so it's fat loving. And so it does go into the milk, and we're unsure really of the dose the baby gets. So definitely pregnancy and breastfeeding, you want to stay away from it.
And we're down to about a minute and a half here on the show, but just really quickly for public safety with regard to CBD, is there THC in CBD if it's done over the counter? Or what's the risk?
Yeah, so over the counter, the CBD should have less than 0.3% THC, With that said, the regulation of it is kind of like how they regulate supplements. So you have to be really careful. Another question I get a lot is, can you test positive on a drug test? So let's say you're getting interviewed for a new job and you're just using CBD, you still can test positive. So I really like to tell my patients that so they're aware of that.
Well, that's incredibly important. I just want to thank you so much for coming on today, Dr. Kelsey Schwander. It's been great having you on. Tell everyone how they can find more information from you or follow you online with your consulting company, Be Health Consulting. Yeah. I'm telling you what, I've got marbles in my mouth today, but I'm just so glad you're here.
No, thank
how can
you
people
so
follow
much.
You?
Yeah. Yep. So you can go to my website. So it's the letter B and then healthconsulting.com. You can find me on Instagram, which is Be Health Consulting, and you can just email me personally. So it's KelseyFarmD@BeHealthConsulting.com.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. For more information from me, find me online at AmandaLaPlante.com. And you can also find the Facebook Live of this episode and other information at Facebook.com/GetRealToHeal. And check out our audio files on SoundCloud.com/GetRealToHeal. Go make it a great day.